Good afternoon. Welcome to this afternoon's Aspiring Principals webinar on dissecting the questions every aspiring principal should be ready for in an interview. We're so glad you're with us. I'd like to introduce Dr. Gracie Branch, NAESP's Associate Executive Director for Professional Learning. Welcome, Gracie.
Thank you, Honor, and good afternoon, everyone. It's such a pleasure to be here and a privilege to get to introduce our facilitators for the webinar today. And I'm going to start with Mr. Todd Nessoloni. He's the Director of Culture and Strategic Leadership for the Texas Elementary Principals and Supervisors Association, better known as TEPSA. He's also served as an award-winning principal of a pre-K fifth grade campus of over 775 students in a rural town in Texas. He's been recognized by the White House, John C. Maxwell, the Center for Digital Education, National School Board Association, the BAMEs, and more for his work in education and with children. Todd's first book was a runaway smash, Kids Deserve It, co-authored with Adam Welcome. And Todd also has a new book recently out in May, When Kids Lead, An Adult's Guide to Inspiring, Empowering, and Growing Young Leaders. So thank you, Todd, for being here today. Our next facilitator is Tracy Hiller. She is the 2018 Maryland National Distinguished Principal, and she's the planning principal for Urbana Elementary School, which I just found out is opening this July in Frederick, Maryland. Her accolades as a principal include serving as the principal of a 2016 Maryland Blue Ribbon School and a 2017 National Blue Ribbon School. I mentioned that Tracy was named the 2018 National Distinguished Principal of the Year and has the privilege of being named the 2017 Frederick County Teacher of the Year and the 2017 Frederick County nominee for the Washington Post Teacher of the Year. Tracy was recently recognized by the Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated for her educational leadership. So lucky to have Tracy with us today. And last but never least is Dr. Brad Gustafson. He is an award-winning principal, speaker, and best-selling author. He also is serving as a national advisor with Future Ready Schools and a school improvement consultant with Scholastic. Brad was Minnesota's Principal of the Year in 2016, and the National School Boards Association recognized him as a 20 to watch principal in 2017. He co-hosts a school leadership podcast, and Brad is also the author of a new book, Reclaiming Our Calling, Helping Educators Build Relationships and Getting Results. So truly, we have a panelty of royalty with us today. And so thank you for being here. And we really look forward to hearing your presentation today.
Thanks, Gracie, for the very gracious introduction. We're excited. And I was telling in all the planning calls we did with Tracy and Todd, as I was just listening to their exchanges, I wanted to actually flip over and just register to listen. So that's probably what I'll do today. But we want to preface this by saying if you were to talk to 10 or 100 hiring administrators and superintendents, they all might give you different, vastly different, or maybe slightly different advice. So we're just sharing our best based on our experiences to try to help people. The format for today, we have 5 overall topics that we collaborated on that we think are really important to be prepared for in an interview. So we'll lean into those broader topics. We'll have some interactive stuff like short dips in the chat when we're doing that. But then we'll segue after each of the 5 broader topics. We'll go right into a specific question that aligns with that topic, and we'll really dissect it and share some experiences and some advice, hopefully, that's helpful for people. We want to mention that the chat is a big driver of the work and conversation today. So as I already mentioned, like hopefully you light it up with your ideas and questions and, you know, even pushback or things that you want us to try to address as well, be sure that you're responding to everyone. Don't just do it. Sometimes the chat can be a little finicky, so make sure that you are, your response really goes to everyone. Before we dive in, I have a question just to kick things off, not really part of the script or any of the topics, but if anyone's connectivity breaks and you, if all you get from this webinar is what Todd and Tracy are about to say right now, here we go, right? So Todd and Tracy, just to kind of kick things off, what's like some overall best advice or a nugget that you would give people just in thinking about a job or an interview for an aspiring administration job?
Tracy, you take the floor first.
You want to do that? I would just say truly, just to be true to yourself and your beliefs. I don't think anyone else's beliefs can, you can't adopt them as your own, but if you're true to yourself and your beliefs, you're going to come across as that genuine person that they're looking for to fill that position at their school.
You know, and I got to say, first of all, I'm excited to see so many of my Texas people in this chat today. I'm seeing Texas pop up, so Texas representing. But anyway, you know, when I think about what my best advice overall would be, number one, exactly what Tracy said, and you'll probably hear me say that a lot today because I feel like Tracy's the smartest person in the room and we're just going to be parroting what she says. But the other thing I would say is don't feel like you have to be over-prepared. Know your beliefs and rest assured that your voice is strong enough to be in that room. I know that whenever I'm leading an interview and interviewing, I don't like when I'm looking for somebody who's going to be powerful and strong and encouraging to those kids and to the other staff, but they seem so, and it's uncomfortable being in an interview, don't get me wrong, but I want to see that power that I know who I am and I know I'm the best fit for you. And if you don't believe it, that's your loss. But I know that I'm a great fit for this school. And when that comes in, I love that ownership. I'm like, yes, I do want somebody who knows who they are. And then we're all still figuring it out. None of us really know who we are, no matter how old you are. But portraying that confidence without being looking like a jerk. Like you got to find that middle ground. Yep. Brad, what about you?
I love that we do this a lot, it seems, because we present together quite a bit too, but I over-prepare, and I would encourage other people to over-prepare for interviews, even to the point where you might be guessing who's going to be on the panel and researching them and their passions just so that you can connect a little bit more. But that wasn't my advice. I just had to quickly disagree with Todd. My advice is don't apologize for the lack of leadership experience you might have if you're applying for your first AP or head principal job. We've all been there. I honestly think that most hiring teams are looking for reasons to hire someone. And when candidates come in, potential principals, and they're apologizing for not having quote unquote real leadership experience, whatever that means, it's always a red flag because we're looking for them, like Todd said, to come in and be strong and actually connect to the leadership experiences they have, whether it's in the classroom as a, you know, as a varsity coach, as someone, at Sunday school, whatever they are, to highlight those. I think that's really important. I think we can segue into our first overall topic. And just to kind of lean into this question, Tracy and Todd, can you talk about the importance of purpose and how that should probably manifest over the course of an interview?
I think many of us are totally aware of Simon Sinek. He's one of my favorites. And he wrote a book, Start With Your Why. I think before we go out and start to prepare ourselves, why do you truly want to be a school leader? This can go across many positions within a school. Why do you want to become a specialist and so forth? But to become a principal, what is your why? And your why should be based on a reason, not just because, oh, that's a great school or, you know, I don't have to commute far, but what is your why for wanting to be there? And I think that's what I would, you know, bring into that to share with everybody. What is your true why to be there? And mine is to, I would say my one word to describe my why would be, I want to be inspired every day when I attend work. So that would be just some lead into what we're going to talk about.
You know, and when I think about my why, I am not a one word guy. Like I'm too verbose and too chatty to get it down to one word. And I feel like there's parts of this presentation that Brad planned perfectly against me because he knows me so well. But anyway, when I think about, you know, my why, and I see all the words popping through the chat right now, and all of them impact me in some way, because I think, yeah, that one, yeah, that one. But for me personally, my why for being a school leader is very similar to my why for being a teacher. And that is, I became an educator because I wanted to be that person in somebody's life that made the impact. That's why I became an educator. It wasn't because I loved teaching a certain subject, but I didn't have a teacher that left that mark on me, but I did have other adults in my life as a kid, mm-hmm. and I knew the importance of that. And so when I became a teacher, I wanted to leave that impact on others. And when I moved to the school principal role, it was the same thing. I want this school to leave an impact, and I want to be able to say I was part of that. And so I guess if I had to choose one word, it would be impact. Brad, what's yours?
Yeah, so for as far as the why goes, I'm going to address the approach, kind of like you're rubbing off on me, Todd. I'm going to be a rebel here. Instead of just giving a one-word thing, it's make sure that you're not waiting for the perfect question to share your why. In fact, probably a good on-ramp is the first question you get in the interview. Hopefully you're able to share your why and weave that in while also answering the question. But making sure that your core beliefs, you know, and maybe, you know, 3 is a good number. If you have 30 core beliefs, like we all probably do, but that's not necessarily an effective thing to lead with during an interview. But if you pick 3 and are able to weave those into the DNA of a lot of your answers throughout an interview, the hiring team will walk away with a pretty good sense of who you are and how strongly committed you are to those things. So that would be kind of how I would even kind of enter into those waters. Looking ahead, let's actually dissect a question that could come up. So the question is, why do you want to become a school leader? That might not be the first question you're asked, but it could come up during an interview. So what do you notice, Tracy, Todd? What do you think of when you see or hear a question like that?
All right, Todd, it's your turn to go first this time.
You know, I think it goes back to your why, and you, both Tracy and Brad said something really powerful that I want to make sure everybody hears, and that is know your why well enough where it truly is a part of who you are, and it's not a canned answer. Mm-hmm. You don't want it to look like you were just waiting for this question, and boom, here's exactly what, and it's like, no, if it is a part of you and your heart, it weaves itself through the rest of the questions. And so, you know, when I think of a question like this, and I think, you know, why do you want to become a school leader? It's such a big question. You don't want to ramble on for 30 minutes about why you want to be a school leader, because then I don't even remember what the heck I asked you. And then that's annoying to me as an interviewer, going, what did I ask? Like, I don't even remember anymore. But you don't want it to be so short where you're like, why'd you want to become a school leader? Because I love kids. I'm like, okay, well, that doesn't really tell me anything. So, you know, I love this question, but I think the more you know yourself and the more you're prepared, but you're not scripted, I think that's important to remember.
And I think for me, it goes back to what I said in the beginning, be true to yourself and your beliefs and not what someone else want you to believe or you think that's the right thing to say, because my old principal said blah, 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 and he became a principal. But if that doesn't fit you, that's not right. But I think, again, as we go back to what is your why, it's going to certainly come through within your experience that why do I want to be a school leader? It's a question that I use a lot with every interview that I give in Frederick County for my support staff to my administrative staff. I always ask, why do you want to join the staff? What's your why for wanting to join the staff at Blasey Blah School? Because I just don't want to hear you like me. Great, but that really doesn't impress me. But to think about why, and that why has to look for what is going to be your impact on your staff, the impact on your community, and certainly the biggest impact will be on your scholars every day that come to school to look at that. So those are the responses I would love to hear when people are sharing those responses, and to talk about those 3 things and the impact that they could have within those 3 communities that I just spoke of.
Yeah. Thanks, Tracy. Thanks, Todd. And people are responding in the chat with some great variations of that question or how it might also present in an interview, which is a pretty powerful thing. when I look at that question and dissect it, a couple things come to mind. People generally, when they ask you a question, they do want an answer. They don't want you to skirt it. They don't want you to get distracted and not feel like it was addressed. That can be a off-putting. Somebody in the chat earlier said, well, what if I don't actually have experience with that or don't know? And I think the most important thing is to don't pretend and just, you just honestly have to say, you know, I'm not really sure, I don't have experience, but here's what I think is important in what I'm hearing you ask. And it reminds me of this experience or this belief and then how myself and our team leaned into that challenge and worked together for kids. So I think there's always a way, even without having experience, we can humbly, authentically say we don't know, but we can connect it to something, I think, that's related or helpful. As an on-ramp question, right before we go to the next topic, I hope that people mention their why. And I've been on principal hiring committees. You know, that first question that most interviewers ask, something kind of about, tell us about your professional experiences. And sometimes it combines, why do you want to be here and things like that. But I know that if people talk about their resume, kind of like what Todd referred to, for like 10 minutes, it really gets old, and we don't need that. If you can inject your why or your purpose or why you want to be a school leader into that on-ramp question in a natural way, like, to me, that's exciting and hopefully passion-infused.
You know, and you brought up a good comment there, Brad, about especially that first question, because I think something to keep in mind is you are probably not the only applicant, which means you are not the only interview that I've had to sit in that day or that week. And for me, it's like when somebody is going on and on and on, I just start to zone out because I'm like, I've already interviewed so many people, like, this is just going on forever. So keeping it short and to the point, but still getting out enough of who you are. So I think that's important to remember.
In looking at the next topic, this is one that every single person in this webinar will encounter during the interview process, I would assume. It's like those bread and butter questions. We don't always know the exact one we're going to get asked, but you know, you can picture the ones that are cliche, but they're cliche because they're important and people actually want to know what you think about, you know, differentiation and parent communication and things like that. So Tracy and Todd, curious about like any advice you have for aspiring principals on how to prep or approach for the traditional, whatever you want to call them, cliche bread and butter questions.
I would say, thinking again, as I think we're going to weave, as we said before, our why through every question. But I think those bread and butter questions, those are those what you learned from the books. If I would say working as a school leader, if you were the assistant principal heading leadership, to be thinking about those questions that we could ask about, how would you monitor student progress? But to be able to prepare for those things, you've had to live them within your school. So to be thinking about the experiences as a assistant principal, look at that principal description of skills that they're asking for, those prerequisites to say, these are the skills we want for a principal, and say to yourself, have I done these things and what things can I match up to say? Or if they say they want that leader that is, you know, can progress monitor, well, share that you set up a system where they were able to progress monitor every 2 weeks. The leadership team came back and did that. So I think if you can look at any of those indicators and say to yourself, what have I done to match those? You will probably hit one of those traditional bread and butter questions that you're going to get during that interview.
Well, you know, Tracy, you said something really important there, and that is, you know, districts will post what they're looking for in the applicant. And so being able to find that list, I mean, I've never applied for a job where I didn't see, like, these are the things our district looks for in a teacher or a principal or any of that. But looking over that so you know what they're looking for right away. And yeah, that document may not have been approached to them for years, but that's good things to be thinking about in the interviews. And so, you know, when I think about bread and butter questions and when it comes to this, you know, one of those things that I often see is, you know, when people say things, and I see somebody already, Dolores already put it in the chat as well, as strengths and weaknesses. You know, that's one that I feel like every interview I've been on, whether I've been in the room as part of the interviewing committee or whether I've been an applicant, that always comes up. Tell us about your biggest strength, or what are you most proud of, or where's when way you really failed, or what tell some shortcomings that you have. And A, it's really uncomfortable to talk about your strengths. Like, unless you are like super like I don't know, secure in yourself. I've never been able to talk about my strengths and feel good about it. And so for me, prepping that ahead of time to know that, let me own my strengths. Let me feel good in those and be ready with, here's some things that I really bring to the table that I think I do well. And then at the same time, when it comes to weaknesses, I think addressing it from a humble perspective is important. You don't want to just be like, oh, well, there's a lot I don't know though. Like, let me just start listing or, but always having that mindset of, but I'm a learner. And so these are some weaknesses that I have, but I'm working on them by doing this. I just read a book recently that's helping me grow in this area. I'm planning on attending this webinar, this training that's going to help me grow in that weakness because I know it's a weakness. Like for me as an interviewer, that my ears perk up immediately going, wait, you not only have you identified your weakness, but you're already planning to fix that weakness. Like that to me says learner. That's what I want in a principal position. Because let me tell you, no matter how much you think you know about being a principal, you don't know at all about being a principal till you get in there and do it. And so Brad, what about you?
Well, quick synthesis here. So Gracie in the chat gave great advice. Answer as an aspiring administrator, not necessarily a teacher or a coach. I think that is a really important distinction, like answer from the perspective of the job that you're going for. Mm-hmm. But then combining what I heard Tracy and Todd say, a powerful 1-2 punch there, like having the best practices represented and the theory and the pragmatic experience, but then also coupling that with what Todd said, like emotional intelligence. Like when you're answering a traditional bread and butter question, no matter what the question, I don't think they're just judging your content. I think it's the humility, the communication skills, the collaboration, the number of times you're saying I versus we. For me personally, and this is maybe the best advice I was ever given about interviewing, from someone, it was actually, our executive director in Minnesota, who's just super helpful, great leader, John Millerhagen. I was going through the NDP process and he helped, he meets with all of the NDP candidates and has great conversations, but to authentically show up and answer about yourself, the advice John gave was, you know, in an answer, and this would apply to bread and butter questions for sure, you know, state your belief succinctly about it, share a story, and then at the end, share kind of the results or to Todd's point, what you learned or what you might do different. I mean, that's a powerful trifecta. And like, how might you do that? The way that I do it when I interview or have interviewed has been, I have a bank of about 10 stories or more that matter to me. Like I carry them with me in my core because they align with my beliefs, involve the team and we accomplish something bigger than we could have done alone. And then when I hear a bread and butter question, I'll kind of quickly reference like which one of those stories really highlights or fits what they're asking. And I'll do just that. I'll state my belief. I'll just quickly kind of share the story to personalize it. So it's not all theoretical. They can see, well, here's what they actually did about that. And then I kind of end on the difference that it made. So that's how I approach that topic.
Hey Brad, can I just throw back in there? I was reading Kristen Hughes, Sue's, she threw a question out and she said, I struggle answering traditional questions about dealing with discipline because each school, district, or child has different needs and there is no one answer to discipline that works for every campus. But I would phrase that the other way, Kristen, and say to yourself, can you explain a mistake maybe that you've made in the past and how you addressed it? Keep that thought in your head because you said you struggle with being able to talk about that, but look at every situation where you felt, how did I solve that? What could I have done differently? And I think approaching it that way, it will help you think about where your strengths were and then where those areas of weakness or concern are that you might need to beef up that a little bit. So it will help you with answering that question and not really knowing what that discipline policy or procedures may be within that school district because they all are very different. But I think if you're able to think that way, how would I have solved it? You know, I solved it. What could I have done differently? And I think that's a way to address those strengths and weaknesses within that as well. And I hope that helps you a little bit, Kristen.
You know, I'd love to learn from you guys. Brad, what is a traditional bread and butter question that you always have in every one of your interviews?
Well, honestly, the strengths and weakness one. Let's flip to, that's actually, I see you did your pre-show prep work, Todd. Nice job setting us up there. We'll go to the actual question and dissect it. Like, this is the one for me that it's such a good opportunity to, not only to show a strength or two that's authentic, but it's also rife with pitfalls, I think, because I no matter how many times you Google like things to think about on this bread and butter question, you'll hear people do it all the time, and they'll share a weakness that isn't really a weakness, or it doesn't really show what Todd referred to earlier as like that learner's mindset. Mm-hmm. But yet I still struggle and on the spot, that would probably be the question. Actually, a lot of people in the chat had that one too. When you see that question, what are your look fors when you're hiring an AP or on a principal hiring committee? What do you hope to hear?
You know, Brad, you go first. Okay. You've been sending me and Tracy into the
yeah,
fire.
Yeah, it was working really well for me too. I was like, woo!
I knew what you were doing. So that's why I'm like, I'm going to wait a little bit. Hopefully Tracy won't say anything. I'm going to be like, Brad, you take
it. I was waiting.
I think I'll start on the weakness thing. Like, honestly, when I'm answering that and when I'm hearing other people answer it, I think I really want an honest, professional weakness that shows some self-reflection, but also that shows, like, that you've actually worked on it. You know yourself, because most people don't want to hire people who don't know themselves. That can be problematic over the long run. But if you're able to share, like, here's something I struggle with, and like, I'm just making I didn't think about this and I probably should have, but like self-doubt. It's something like I'll have a conversation and then I'm replaying, you know, did I offend someone? Did I not sound right? Et cetera, et cetera. I mean, those are conversations, whether it's like this now or after doing a keynote or whatever in a staff meeting. Here's what I've done to work on it. But then coming across, like, cause people's, When you answer that question, their signals and radars are going to be listening, not just for your answer, but I think for emotional intelligence. Like, is Brad too needy? And every time he talks, is he going to come and call Tracy and Todd and Honor and Gracie after this webinar? Like, how'd I do? You know, blah, 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 blah. That just wouldn't go well. But being confident enough to say, like, here's who I am. Here's something that's hard for me. And here's kind of how I'm, whatever, compensating or working on it. Woo, that's hard going first. Don't do that again.
When I look at this, the question we asked of bread and butter that I think about, I read Cody's response, Cody Colvin. Can you reframe in your answer weakness as an opportunity? So I'm thinking right now, it made me like change what I would think one of those bread and butter questions were to help them bring out their strengths and weaknesses, is to think about when problem solving, what learning opportunities did you find when you were problem solving a difficult task at school? So then they would be able to share their strengths with us and also look at those, instead of saying weaknesses, to really talk about what was that opportunity, because after everything that we do, I think there's always a learning opportunity, as Cody said in his chat that he sent to us, that really people can infuse those no matter what that situation is. We can hear that, you know, Cody's willing to learn from every experience and to say, what can I do to maybe fade out some of those areas where I'm not as strong, but also look at them as opportunities and how will I grow to apply that to help us all grow and learn during that situation. So, Cody, thanks for sharing that. I like that weakness is an opportunity.
Good insight. And I think also to really dissect the question or to continue to dissect it, be wary or careful to not spin a question too much, because people are going to want to hear probably your actual weakness. So it's good to be vulnerable, which is part of what, you know, authentic. But if you're steering too much during an interview away from what they're actually asking you, that can be kind of a red flag too. Cody.
You know, and what I think about too when I hear this question is I love what Melissa asked in the chat. She said, you know, should you start with your weaknesses first or your strengths? And I say, you know, start with the strengths. Because the reality is, regardless of what others may tell you, they're listening for your weaknesses. Like most interviews, the people are picking the same sort of strengths. I'm looking to see what you identify as areas of weaknesses, because that's what I'm more interested in. And I love that Tracy brought this up and that it was said in the comments, is looking at it from perspective of, you know, for me, I try to look at it as a weaknesses that I'm working on growing in. Because I think if all you're doing is identifying these things are weaknesses and that's it, what you've told me is, you know what you're weak in and you're not even trying to fix it. like as a interviewer, I'm going to be struck immediately. And I mentioned this earlier, right away to know that you've identified weaknesses, but you're working on them. And I think that's where you can make that a powerful closer where they can be like, oh, they really know what they need to work on. And they actually already are. And so not that you have all the answers right there because then it's not a weakness anymore, but just know that, you know, one area that I may struggle in would be this. And I'm really working on growing in that by doing these kind of things and collaborating with these people and stuff like that. So.
And Todd, I think you hit the nail on the head that it's not just the weakness you choose, but then it's your approach and the interaction you give to it. So same with the strength. I mean, passionately or authentically and confidently share your strength. But if you just tell me relationships or technology or whatever it is, that's not enough and it's not a differentiator. Like tell me, building relationships is a strength. I believe this, like I believe in it, and here's how I've done it intentionally in the past and the difference that it made. And share a quick story about a parent or a kiddo who, it may, you know, whatever the situation was, but how it actually made a positive difference because of you being intentional with your strength. Should we dive into what continues to be another really important topic?
Yeah.
So equity is a really important thing. And my question just for us to enter it into it is, how can people who are interviewing move beyond just sharing their beliefs? Because I believe that districts are probably looking for more than just beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think before we even dive into that, I would love for us as a panel to define what equity means. Because, you know, I think equity is one of those buzzwords. And something you said a minute ago, Brad, when you were like, I don't like when somebody just says like relationships or technology. When I, as an interviewer, hear that, all I hear is, you know, the buzzwords. Like, mm-hmm. Do not tell me relationships, be specific. Do not tell me technology. What does that mean? Can you turn a computer on or do you actually know how to use a computer? Like, what's the difference? And so I think equity is a big buzzword right now. So I'd love for us to kind of define that ourselves. And so, Tracy, how would you define equity?
I think when probably last year, if someone probably, or months ago, someone said equity to me, I probably right away, race would have probably come to the forefront for me. But now when I think of equity, I think about equal access for all. And I think the digital age, that distant learning has really pushed us that way to think about that. So that's how I would see equity now, is equal access for all. And that means in I'm looking at instruction, materials of instruction, resources that the students may need. So that's how I'm packaging equity now.
I love that. I always love starting with you, Tracy, because I feel like you have the most beautiful answers. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to write that down and cite Tracy later because that was so good. You know, but I think you brought up a really good point, Tracy. It's the same thing for me. You know, I think when equity became the buzzword that it is, it was centered around race. And yes, that is an important piece of equity, but equity also means your families that are single parent families. How are you being equitable to them, or your families with kids with special needs, or with kids with differing learning abilities or socioeconomic status? Like all of that plays into equity. And so this can get a very big and overwhelming topic very quickly, but you have opportunities to break it down into smaller sections.
Yeah, and to add to what Tracy and Todd said so beautifully, the one extra word I would infuse into my answer or sentence, so now it's getting to be a run-on sentence if I steal Tracy and Todd's, but I would add representation as one of the kind of look-fors, whether it's in the books that kiddos have access to and are reading or the authors who are visiting school, things like that. I would also say, and this applies to every topic and every question we've dissected, but I think it's also and especially true for this one, like show up as your authentic self. And if you're slinging buzzwords or false promises or haven't been trying and immersed in the work and don't have actions, then do not represent that you have. Share who you are and what you've done and where you're, what you're doing to grow in this, but do not pretend on any question, including this topic.
Because you can see, as an interviewer, you interview so many people that you read right through those people who've been trained how to interview. So I love that you said that, Brad. If you are not well-versed in this, number one, go educate yourself. But number two, don't pretend to be well-versed in this, because I'm going to sit there going, you have no idea what you're talking about. And now I don't care about the rest of your answers because you just lied to me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's go. Sorry, Tracy.
All I was going to say, it goes back to what, you know, kind of what I said in the beginning, is that you got to be true to yourself, because we're going to know that you're not being true to yourself. You're giving us some book answer that we're really not looking for, as Todd talked about. Like, we will see right through that. So.
Yep. And not just for interview purposes, but if you feel like you're going to show up to an interview and sell kids short or yourself short on the equity topic, like, pause right now and do the work, you know, start reading, start learning, start conversing, and having that inform your thinking and conversations and action. So this question three, what work have you done to ensure every student gets a high quality and equitable education? This could easily and should be a question that most of us get asked and that we can answer to. So what do you think when you see that question?
You know, it's funny you say that most of us have seen this, because as a school principal, I can see my superintendent asking me this in a principal meeting, much less an interview. So I think this is something you've got to have at the forefront of your mind. And like you said, Brad, you know, for those who are watching live and then who will check this out in the next week or so, I mean, you know what's going on across our country right now, whether it's COVID, whether it's rampant racism, whatever it is. And it's been very clear that no longer can anybody claim ignorance about these topics. Like, you have the resources. You can buy the books. You can attend the webinars. You can reach out to people on social media. Like, you can't in an interview claim, well, you know, I've never really thought about that, because I'm going to go, that's national news. Like, it's everywhere. You better have thought about it, because we have to be ready for that, and I can't choose you as a candidate if you haven't even thought about it. And then if you have and thought, well, it really doesn't apply to me, oh, then you're not ready to work with a wide range of people. So I think, you know, when I think about this and this question, and this to me goes so many different directions. And so if I were answering this question, I'd do it from what is most important on my heart. And my heart means equitable education for kids of all colors. Like, that's what I'm passionate about right now, is kids and families, no matter what the color of their skin is and what culture they come from. And so if I were to answer this, I would start with that, going, well, one way that equity I feel like is something that we can address as a school is really making sure that we are listening to and amplifying the voices of all of our constituents, and making sure that even though, and I would say this in the interview, even though I am a white middle-class male, I am aware of my privilege, and I am aware that I need to make sure that my Black family's voices are just as loud as mine, that my brown family voices, that my Asian American voices, that my Indian American voices, that all of those are represented in the decisions that I make as a school leader, in the curriculum that we're going to put forth, in the books that we're going to provide to kids. Like, I can go on and on about that one piece of equitable part of the education. And as an interview person sitting in the interview, you're going to look knowledgeable, even though you're only talking about a piece of it. Because the reality is, if you understand even a piece of what equity means, we can mold that into addressing all the needs of equity. So what do you two think?
I would say, Todd, you know, certainly agree with you when we have the conversation about this. I think the epidemic, even if they don't want to approach it from specific situations, they can certainly look at how the epidemic made a difference and showed us all and made us all question, are our schools equitable? Because the day we had to stop school and to say our kids aren't coming anymore, did we have a plan to make sure those students were going to be fed? Did we have a plan to make sure those students were going to get quality instruction? And then they have the resources at home to access that quality instruction. So I think from that point of equity to look at, did all of my, you know, you can start there. Did all of my kids have equal access? And then how am I assessing those students? You know, I don't want you to say just give them an A because they're there, but truly, were they getting that quality instruction to be able to continue their learning, and then demonstrate that to the teacher as well? But if they didn't have the technology, or as we said before, maybe it's a single parent home where that kid may be home by themselves, or they don't have a Chromebook or whatever to be able to exercise their, you know, look at the exercises or tune into the teacher Google meets or whatever we have within your different counties. But I think, again, it goes back to, if I'm looking at equity, does my school have the materials of instruction to meet those kids' needs? Do my kids have, will my kids get fed? You know, where are those meals? Will my cafeterias be open or a site where they can actually get a meal and have food? And then again, access to technology. Many of our school systems had to come up with different things to find it. I'm really proud of my school system where, you know, Comcast partnered with our school system to make sure kids had hotspots and all of those things to make sure that they were ready. So we really prepared for that equity piece for all of our students. Can I say we're perfect? No. But I think the efforts that we took will actually enlighten any assistant principal that had to ask that question if they were applying for a principalship. So if you didn't open your ears, it was because you didn't want to hear that part about equity, that you won't be able to answer that question in an interview. But if your ears were open, your eyes were open, certainly you're going to be strong when you answer that question during your interview.
You know, and I want to answer a question real quick that was, that popped up, and they said, is it okay to provide your own experience as a student? For example, I'm an ELL or an immigrant. I came from a single parent home, different things like that. I think you can, but I would be careful in acting like that's the only experience that matters, if that makes sense. Like I would say something to the effect of, as somebody who came from a high poverty home life when I was a child, I understand when those voices aren't listened to and when those perspectives aren't taken into account. And I would make it a point to make sure I'm hearing from people from all areas. And so I think when you bring it up from that perspective, where it's not like my voice is the most important one in the room, but I bring a different perspective. So I'm going to look at it differently. I think that's important there. Brad, what is your kind of reflection over this?
Yeah, with what you just said, I think people's past experiences, it gives credibility, and there's a level of passion and commitment there. So I actually am in favor of someone saying, you know, here's been my experience as a student, and it's one of the drivers for me, and it's why I show up how I do and take it so seriously. So I like that connection. In what Tracy said, kind of dissecting the question, like when it says, what work have you done? The answers that she gave as she talked us through, like that would be my look for is sitting on a hiring committee, the work. So moving from belief to actually citing the work, I guess the extra lens or what I might add to that would be like an example, because I'm big on sharing the belief, sharing like a real story or a difference you made or something you learned and then how it kind of played out to try to answer a question. I might share how our team is invested in conversations and then practice that looks at different cultures and the strengths that they show up with. And then looking at that, like in conversations about coaching and teaching and pedagogy, like understanding what we're seeing and not having to try to force all kids to fit into a certain mold or whether that's proximity, verbal overlapping, whatever trace we're talking about, like not overlooking or trying to be colorblind to the different strengths kids and cultures have. So that would be kind of the part that I would probably address in that.
And Brad, I don't know, there was one, Andre, he put out, he's reexamining the word minorities. I wish we could chat with him, but why, I guess, I mean, we won't know his why because we're not talking directly to him, but I think with everything in education, everything in our world and things that are happening, I think we're all reexamining a lot of things that we say and a lot of our beliefs at this time. So Andre, I believe many of our beliefs and maybe the use of words or different things that we use in our buzzwords in education are changing based on what's been happening in our world with the pandemic and with all the other social unrest and different things in our social, you know, things that are happening, that we're going to be changing a lot of what we say and what that means because of what's it's. Our world is encouraging us to do that. And education, we should be that place where we are changing, ever changing, and re-examining things. So thank you for throwing that out.
And Tracy, I love that you and I both caught that because I put in the comments something that somebody said to me once is they said, what's your population makeup? And I said, oh, we're about 50% Hispanic, about 25% African American, and the rest is a mix of white and Asian and some other things in there. And they were like, so then why are you calling them the minority? Because clearly they're not. the minority at your school. You should be calling them the minority majority because that's what they are. And that was such a big thing to me because our words matter. And I just spoke with another school teacher out of California last week who she had a very unique word. Instead of saying high poverty areas or kids from low socioeconomic status, she said they've changed it at their school to call it low wealth. That those are kids. So the word you hear is wealth, so that you're putting that in their mindset of, you know, right now their wealth is, it's a low wealth, but they have the opportunity to get out of that. And so our words matter, and making sure like we are looking at those and staying away from those stereotypical, we see them on documents and data scores and things like that, and understanding like who are our words affecting in that.
Yeah, and I'm going to come full circle. Todd will chuckle at this, but someone earlier asked, what about applying for a position where you're pretty sure they already have an internal candidate selected? That's always a hard thing, and people wonder all the time. Like, in my experience in our district, every position we've ever posted has been a real, actual position and opening, okay? And that's important to know. But if there ever is a situation in the world where you think someone's kind of in line or has a good chance at getting it, my best advice would be to apply. My wife always tells me, don't limit God. Don't need to sugarcoat it. Don't limit God. So apply, but then make it really hard on the interview team. If they thought they wanted so-and-so who's been in the district for 20 years or whatever, make it hard. And here's how, and here's where I'm coming full circle. When Tracy said earlier about addressing the minority comment, most people, when they go to an interview, probably are going to try to have the perfect words and not say something that offends anyone. That's probably a good practice, not to offend people interviewing you. Mm-hmm. However, can you imagine interviewing someone and they authentically show up and just say, they give their answer and speak their truth, but then they also say, I just got to be honest, I'm struggling and still trying to learn. I hear people using the word minority, just kind of like the conversation we just had. Like, if I'm interviewing someone and hearing them be honest and articulate it really well, but like they're verbalizing what I wrestle with, it's like, dang, I want to work with that person. Cause that's part of the interview. You're not just wanting to hear the content. It's like, could I see myself collaborating with that person? So those are all things that I thought of, and Todd's very used to my random thinking, but I think that actually maybe made sense.
That was really good, Brad. I'm just going to say, I was looking at the time and I was like, ooh, we are chatty today. We still got slides to get through, but that was good, Brad. You were on it today. Tell Deb he did a good job practicing with you.
All right. So let's go this next part, curveball questions, my favorite topic. They come up all the time in all different forms. What do you think people are looking for, like in hiring teams, when they even ask a curveball question?
I'll go. You know, I ask curveball questions because I know you've practiced and I know you've prepared yourself. So I want to throw you off your script and see if, and you know, I ask the curveballs towards the end. So that way, hopefully you've gotten a little more comfortable in the interview. Cause we all know we all stress out so much at the beginning, but I'm just like, I just want to throw you off your game. Like, I want to ask something not at all to deal with my school or with education, to learn more about you so that I don't get a canned answer.
Mm-hmm. And I agree, Todd, and I was just thinking about one of my questions that I've asked, a curveball question. I asked the person, if you could have a superpower, what would you choose and why? And I remember the first time I asked that question, actually it was a custodial interview, and I asked him that. He looked at me, he goes, and why does that what does that have to do with cleaning the building? And, you know, and for me, it's kind of like, you know what? I said, I just wanted to know a little bit more about you, because I said that superpower will tell me how you're going to zoom through this building to get it clean at night, you know? So I think when you do that, they can let their guard down a little bit to, you know, certainly feel that you are that, you're not just that really straight person that has to ask all these questions, but you also have a personality too, because I don't know if they view us as people with personalities when they come into their interviews. So that kind of gives that little humor to say, you know what, these people are okay. And, you know, and they want to hear the best from me. So that's something that I would think about too, that it's just one of those things to lower the temperature a little bit. And usually I try to ask my question in the beginning, because I think we need to bring that temperature down right away, because people come in so nervous. So that kind of gives them that laugh, and then they laugh a little bit and kind of go, is that supposed to be funny? You know, and you laugh really hard too. So I think those curveball questions can come in any form. So
And they can come in any form. Like, I've heard Todd ask, like, what's an adventure you've been on? I've heard people ask, like, you're doing a discipline referral and you go into your bag to get the referral out for a student and all you have is a potato. What do you do? I mean, just goofy things, but let's look at a specific one and dissect it. This is a little more academic, but I would classify it as a curveball one. So my advice, I'll go first on this one, is when you get asked that curveball question, it is totally okay to smile and show that you're human and digging it, you know, unflappable maybe, but say, yeah, can you say that one more time? Chances are the interview team is getting a little bit of a kick out of it too, and they'll want to ask it again and totally give you the grace. But what that does is it gives you a little bit of a think time to go to a story or something that actually connects to the question. What do you both think?
Tracy, you go first.
With a curveball question again, right? Is that what we're working on now? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So looking
are we diving into this one, Brad, or are we talking about curveball? What do we want to take?
Well, one in the same. Go either direction. I actually consider this a curveball question just because it's one that kind of makes you think twice. You probably haven't studied that exact question.
Right. Okay. I would say when I think about that trained leader who we all are, you know, we all are trained leaders. We went to school. We took those certifications. We're there. We've learned a lot from our principal as working as an assistant principal. Those are the things we've learned to be a leader. But then to be successful, I think, in the 21st century, and working with our students and now with all the other things that are coming up, we're going to have to look to be that transformational leader. And when we think about that, we have to think about what truly is a transformational leader and what would make you look like a transformational leader during your interview instead of just that trained person where, you know, everything your principal would have said, you're saying. And then, but what does that transformational leader look like to you? And as I shared with Brad and Todd, that our school system here in Frederick, we did a book study, Leadership, and that's the last book I read. So it was kind of something that was fresh for me. And that chapter 11 was my favorite chapter on the transformational and the trained leader about what do you truly do? And I think the questions you're asked, we think about is, do you know how to lead? I think we all know how to lead. But then I think that transformational leader, we have to ask ourselves, why do I lead? Why do I lead? And then this was a big one for me to think about. We all want to be liked. We're like, oh, they like me. They want to be with me. But truly, is that what you want to be as a transformational leader? I would say no. I would look at, is my personality or my leadership, is it contagious? Do you want to follow me because I have a plan, not because you just like me because I do nice stuff for you? And then I think when we look at the trained leader, we have that authority to make people, in a sense, follow us. But I think your transformational leader will ask people, you know what, why don't you help make the difference here at our school? So we all are leading and we're building that. And I would say to you, and I would say to myself, do I want to be a trained leader or a transformational leader? And my why would be, I want to be that transformational leader because I want to help others find their leadership voice to make a difference at our school. So I think when you think about that partnership of being a transformational leader and working with your staff, that's going to hit almost every question because it's not about you, because we may be the principal, but it's not about us every day of the week. And, you know, it's about our staff, helping those teacher leaders grow to be who they are, helping our assistant principal to be the principal they're going to be, and certainly to help our scholars be those wonderful students that we know they are as well. So I think when you think about that is where would that question come from? You are a transformational leader because you're a servant leader. And we know that all hinges on Robert Greenleaf of talking about that servant leader. So I think if you think about those things, it's going to help prepare you for any question that may come up during your interview. And I hope that wasn't too wordy, but.
No, that was perfect. But
we're seeing some questions in the chat that actually can segue nicely into our final topic. So.
Well, before we move into that, Brad, I'd love to kind of, I want to share one of my curveball questions because, you know, what I love about this idea of a curveball is I build curveball questions into my interviews that have nothing to do with education at all because I want to learn who you are. So I love the one Tracy said about what superpower. And so, you know, my two favorites are always the one you alluded to, Brad, the what's the biggest adventure you've been on. And I almost every time the person responds back with, like at school? And I'm like, no, just in life. Like, what's the biggest adventure you've been on? I want to know, like, what have you done? Where have you been? What do you consider adventurous? And there's not a right or wrong here. And then my other favorite one is always, if you were to write a book about your life, what would you call it? And why would you choose that title? Because every single time I ask that, every time, and my team of interview people, they always love sitting in interviews when we get to that one, because the applicant will go, ooh, I've never been asked that one before. And I'm like, great. Then just take a few minutes, breathe in, think about it. What would you call your book that you were to write about your life and why? Because the perspective that the person brings in that moment to say, well, I would call it this because, you know, there's not a way to segue into this, but I dealt with this in my childhood, which led me to be this as an adult. And that's why I would write my book like that. So I love thinking about it through that. So sorry to kind of brainstorm that, Brad, but
now no, that's exciting. That's important stuff. Somebody asked in the chat, like, that final question, do you have any questions for us? So let's go to the final topic, COVID-19 and the pandemic. There is a good chance that your interview will be impacted by this pandemic, maybe because you're interviewing via Zoom. So you should be mindful of your lighting and your sound and all that stuff. There's a good chance you'll be asked about safety and school reopening. The quick advice I have on this is don't make that, like, when we all became teachers and we put on our resume as a crowning achievement that we created a week-long social studies unit, or, you know, like everyone did that, you know, or a similar thing. So I would say maybe when you're applying for your aspiring principal job, not to say I survived COVID-19 because that's what we're all trying to do. But like, how did you differentiate and what leadership did you provide in whatever setting that you were blessed to be able to serve in? And then tie that in your answers. And if you were not asked during your interview about COVID-19, that's a great question to ask about at the end because it's super relevant. Like, can you just walk me through a little bit about some of the things your team is thinking about right now, keeping kids safe and reopening? Where are you at? I mean, that's a really important, I think, relevant question. Can we, for the sake of time, quick bop to our final question? It's the scenario-based one.
Well, so yeah, but before we do, Brad, I want to address something that I've seen asked a bunch in the chat today, and that is about leadership opportunities. Like, what if I don't bring a lot of those opportunities to the table? The way I would look at it is, if you have worked in a school at all, you are a leader, and you have been put in those leadership opportunities. So don't discredit yourself by saying, well, my principal didn't give me those opportunities. It's like, no. You led every single day that classroom, that team, that whatever. So own that, knowing you bring leadership stuff to the table. So, cause I've seen that a lot in the chat today. So as far as this one right here, Tracy, do you want to take it first?
Which one, about preparing for next year and get an email about a parent asking? I shared with our group that I had a custodian that was walking in the parking lot after a tour of our new school, which is not quite done yet. And the parent asked, how's that school going to be ready for my child to come back into? And I think that's a great question that one parent had. Now, a gang of parents, a whole different thing. But I think having that one parent ask that question, and my custodian was able to respond, we cleaned the school, and certainly it's going to be clean enough for me to come in, so I'm going to make sure it's safe for your child too. And I think if we make it about everyone and not just one particular person, that your response, when you respond to that question and share some of, we do this, but you don't have to get down to the scientific part of what you're doing, but even just to share that we're going to make sure every day that our building is ready for our students to come in to every single day. So I think if you share that and it's face-to-face with a parent, they feel that relationship with you and to say, that's really good. I think they're going to be prepared for my child. So that's how I would throw that out there.
And I don't think there is a wrong answer to this question when you are talking about the safety of kids and families and staff. So, I mean, the fact of the matter is we are all learning this at the same time. So all I'm looking for, if I were to ask a question like this, was where's your empathy? Is your empathy only on the students? Because I want you to have empathy for the staff too. Is your empathy only on the staff? I want you to have empathy for the parents who are going to have to be making decisions here. So I'm just looking for empathy.
Yeah, to bring it full circle, Tracy and Todd, I would say the only wrong answer would be not mentioning staff and student safety in your interview. And if you don't get asked about it and don't find a way to bring it up, then in your final question, when they give you a chance to somehow think of a thoughtful way to address that by either sharing your beliefs or asking them what they've done, I think that's a really important thing. The final thing we wanted to do was give you book recommendations for kind of what we've recently read, and you'll see some connections to the conversation. Todd, you want to go first?
Yeah, so the book I recommended is by Chip and Dan Heath, and it's called The Power of Moments. And what I love about this book is it is not an education book. It is great for every single area of your life. We read this as a staff, and just the idea of taking advantage of every moment and not missing a chance to squeeze the goodness out of it so we don't get caught up in the overwhelmed negative side of things.
Even interviews, right? Those can be moments.
I chose John Maxwell Leadership. It was the last book I read. Our school system gave that as an option for us to read, and we had sessions with other principals, elementary, middle, high, or different people within leadership. So it was a great thing. It was a great book to help me reexamine some of my practices that I was thinking, oh, this is pretty good, but really it was surface and not really truly taking that time to, you know, increase my skills. So that leadership, it was helping me change some of my thoughts. And I just thought it was a great book. John Maxwell, we know we all love him and all of his work. And remember, he wasn't an educator. So I always look at him as, you know, we take that business piece and apply some of that within education at times to make us all stronger. So I really enjoyed reading his book.
And I've been inspired by my friend Todd to read lots of kids' books and young adult novels. So the last one I just finished a couple of days ago, Child of a Dream, written by Sharon Robinson. Her dad was Jackie Robinson, who broke the color barrier in baseball. The reason this is important, and kids and adults should read it. It's a great read, but also just as a reminder to let your idiosyncrasies and passions show up during your interview. Reading is one of mine, and you better believe that in several different questions, I would probably be making connections to books and learning through books. That's a wrap.
Yeah, thank you all for being here. It was great and always such an honor to be in your company, and I always feel like I learn a lot about leading and learning. So thank you for being here.